Check, check, check. All welcome to Chatting Between Takes, everybody. I am Sean Benson. I'm your host. And I'm going to play with this mic a little bit. I can just see my reading there. How we doing? How we doing? Okay. Welcome to another CarCast. I can't wait to hear back from you guys how the first one is. You know, we'll see. You know, if it doesn't work, we don't do them. It works for me because it's so fun to be driving. And by the way, thank you all for being with me right now, because you are keeping me hurtling towards my girl. I'm east of Montreal, I'm approaching Quebec City, and I'm taking Eastern Canada by storm here to go visit Emily in PEI. Her family grew up there, her family's from there, and she visits every summer. And so it's around 10:30 p.m. and I left Toronto around 2:33. Man, traffic out of Toronto, don't even talk to me about that. It's ridiculous. I couldn't leave when I wanted. She's been there for a couple days, and I've been working on this show, Saving Hope. By the way, you know, I don't normally plug my shows that aren't mine, right? Like, I'll plug Barn Wedding or the podcast, but when I'm working on, like, The Girlfriend Experience or another show, I like talking about the experience, but, you know, it's not, I'm not invested, and I plug so many damn things that I don't want to be saturating my plug quotient. So I gotta say, Saving Hope is an absolutely delightful show. If you're not watching this, it's on CTV. Check it out. It's my kind of TV. I've done 4 episodes. It looks like I'll probably do some more. Phenomenal group of people. Unjaded, bringing their A game day after day. Crew and cast. Really impressed. And I got to shoot today with Jason Priestley. He directed me. I was more starstruck shooting with the once Brandon Walsh from the original Beverly Hills 90210. Anybody under 30, if you don't know, if you're like, what do you mean the old Beverly Hills 90210? Here's an Emily story. For those of you who are newer to this podcast, Emily is in her 20s and I'm not. So I was going on about how cover songs that aren't much different are a fucking waste of time. Now, the artist might not agree. For example, 5440, I Go Blind, so much better than Hootie and the Blowfish's version. Hootie and the Blowfish is like the same tempo, same key, but not as good. But I'm pretty sure 5440 doesn't mind that Hootie and the Blowfish covered their tune, neither would I. But as a listener, I'm just like, what the fuck, why bother? There's a bunch like that. Or if you're not going to mix it up enough, just don't do a cover, you know. And then it's funny because Emily and I were driving along, and I think I had a mix on my playlist on my phone, and it was like End of the World as We Know It comes on, REM. And I'd been going on about boring covers that weren't interesting enough to warrant themselves. And she goes, oh, I totally see what you mean. And I was like, right? And she goes, yeah, this one is really good, but it's not different enough from the original. Anybody over 30 knows where I'm going with this, to warrant having been done. And I was like, yes, except you got it backwards, gorgeous, because this is the original. And The Great Big Sea you grew up on, while pretty good, isn't good enough to warrant existing. Let's just listen to this one every time. So that's one of those for me where, yeah, just avoid the Plain Jane covers. The current cover of Beverly Hills 90210, I've only seen minutes of, but the original was magnificent. Brandon and Kelly and Dylan and the gang, Steve-O. And anyways, I won't disappear into a reverie, or I'll drive off the road imagining sitting in a Porsche Speedster up at the top of the Hollywood sign listening to, by the way, REM, Losing My Religion. Look it up. It happened. Anyways, so He's a delight, by the way. Oh, my God. I was more starstruck working with Jason Priestley than when I've shot with, like, Harrison Ford or Liam Neeson, who, by the way, I love and grew up, well, not Liam Neeson as much, but obviously grew up with Star Wars and Indiana Jones. So working with those guys, let's say, I mean, it was brilliant, and it let me know my career was in the right place, and it was exciting. But I probably watched 60 episodes of Beverly Hills 90210. I loved that show. We taped it every week and watched it. Does anyone remember taping? It's this thing called a VCR we used to use. And if I watched 60 episodes of that, let's say they're 48 back then minute episodes, so we'll call that 50 hours of Brandon Walsh. Let's say I've seen 10 Harrison Ford movies. That's not even 20 hours of Harrison Ford, and he's playing a different character every time. You see where I'm going with this? My familiarity with not Jason Priestley, but him as an actor, yes. And it's actually when I used to be on General Hospital I got this. People would come up to me. I played a guy named Stephen Lars Weber, and they would just go, oh my God, and they'd start talking to me as though I was Stephen Lars Weber. And I was only on the show for just about a year, but that still means, I think I shot 100 episodes of that show or something. So that's 100 hours of TV that people are watching. And I'm not the, I mean, there's no one lead other than maybe Sonny and Carly, but I'm in every episode or most, and therefore they think they know me. They're watching me almost every day. So it was really interesting because today I had to, and at one point, you know, we're shooting this scene and I'm like, so Jason, and it was very weird to call this person with whom I had an assumed but not real familiarity by their first name that isn't how I, there was a like, our evening began and Peter Sechelle's, it does go well with the chicken. Bum, 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 na, na, bum, na. I'm not speeding. I am not speeding because I have this app on my phone right now that goes, arr. It's like an old klaxon horn. It goes, arr, arr, if I hit a predetermined speed. I got it at 120. I figure anything below 120 is fair game. I always bitch about cops. And by the way, the other day I'm coming down Parkside near my house to get onto the lakeshore. And there's this young guy, and I guess the visual standards of cops are changing because, you know, he had tattoos all down his arms and he had like a kind of shitty beard and he looked about 12. It was an interesting looking police officer. He was on foot. I fucking shit you not, hiding in the bushes, peeking over his shitty little laser gun. And even he looked embarrassed. I mean, he actually looked embarrassed. I was looking at him because I was standing still and traffic wasn't really moving at that time. And he looked at me. It looked like he was in the bushes. And by the way, it was High Park. Like getting his dick sucked in the 80s. Or, you know, sniffing a bit of cocaine in 2002. Or taking a piss and got caught. Because that's how fucking shitty what he's doing there is. And I always talk about this. And Emily will fully back me up on this. She gets tired of my cop rants, and I'm sure you guys do too. The other day, I was parking my motorbike, and these four cops went by on bicycles. And they smiled at me, and one of them waved, and I was like, afternoon, officers. Every one of them was smiling. Their chest was kind of out. There was a pride in how they were moving among the community. And, you know, later on, I saw one of them having, like, stopped somebody. I don't know what for. And they were talking, right? Like, they were working it out. I mean, working it out with the cop having final say. That's what we ask for from them. But they weren't hiding in isolation with their fucking pants down, embarrassed, staring at a little number going 50, 52, 56, 62. Oh, well, it's 62. I guess that person's a criminal. It's so detached from the three-dimensional fabric of life. Whereas those police officers on bikes, and it's interesting how I called the one guy a fucking cop with his pants down, And the other guys, police officers, because they actually deserve respect. Because they're doing their job. And I always say this, even if you're highway patrol, if you're in your car driving on the road, A, everybody's going to slow down around you anyway. So you're, if you actually buy that slowing down is safer, even though statistically the Autobahn is safer than the 401, because even without speed limits, it encourages more self-aware, better driving. Montana had the same study. But anyways, I could go on about this all night, and I'm on the road, so I don't want to eat all our chat time with this. But interactive on the highway, greater benefit anyways, more cars being connected with, and you're actually in the flow and deserve the mantle of police officer. When you're hiding and staring at a little laser gun, a monkey could do it, and all your special skills are just out the window. That said, I don't mind slowing down on this trip. So I only wrapped SED, which is where this all started, around 2 p.m. I couldn't, we thought we were going to be finished sooner. And so I hit all this crap traffic. So it's been a long day, you know. I've been on the road. I mean, it's only 8.5 hours by now, not even. I'm just not as far along as I thought I'd be. So I just had a coffee before I started this.
Could you tell?
But I don't want to be talking and drinking coffee all... Oh my God, Dave Steele, I just burped. Ugh. I do this thing with Emily where when we're in, let's say, Holt Renfrew. I don't know if there's Holt Renfrew in the States. I think there is. But if you're listening in the States or other countries, Holt Renfrew's fancy. And I will just fart as loud as I can. What are you going to do? I'm a child. And Emily thinks this is funny as shit, but she doesn't want to think it's funny as shit. Now, ladies, if you ever want to encourage your man to keep doing the thing that you don't want him to do, then don't make it obvious that you like it, but don't want to like it, because it's going to make me triple, quadruple my efforts. And I know every other guy and girl on the planet are like this. Where basically, if I see you go, stop, but you're smirking, it's not going to stop. I mean, I'm going to go find what... I'll get X-Lax and shit my pants in the hole just to get that laugh again. Because it's not, it's not just that you're laughing. It's that you can't help but laugh. That's how good the joke is. The fart being the joke, by the way, in case you lost track. Not much of a joke, it's the timing. Everything is timing and lighting, by the way. So the idea that I can get this, attempt at not laughing. This brings me to an idea, and I can't remember if we've talked about this on the cast, but the idea of when a kid, me, is looking for attention, and then an adult goes, oh, he's just looking for attention. Don't encourage him. Why not give a child attention? I don't mean 24/7. Oh, he just wants you to laugh, ignore him. Why not laugh at a kid? Like, seriously, do you think that by going, oh, ignore him, that kid is just going to go, oh, I was ignored once. I guess I don't ever want attention. No, that kid's going to go get attention. They're going to either become a class clown or they're going to start acting out. Maybe they'll become a bit of a whore. They're going to get attention. Why not give it to them? Why not give it to them lovingly? And then lovingly, when they're asking for too much, say, that's enough now. I don't know. I'm not a parent that I know of. Oh! See? It's funny, right? It's not funny when you say it's funny. I just actually stepped on my own laugh. That's bad. But hey, maybe I didn't, because I don't know. Maybe the being too self-aware is the pleasing humility of this all, and that's actually the disarming quality that engages you to this podcast, not the ribald humor of the fart joke. Who can say your father put the watch up his little man? I'm at Princeville. I'm not even close to Quebec City, apparently. And I'm not doing a Christopher Walken impression, because were I to admit that that were a Christopher Walken impression, well, you know what I always say, if you really knew who I was, you'd go away. So I can't admit, because it's so fucking dreadful, that the gig would be up. The jig is up. Is it the gig or the jig? So in any case, long road ahead of me. What do we got here? I think we're about 7 hours behind me, which means still like 10 ahead. Maybe even more. It's okay. Like I said though, slowing down, not really a problem, because I used to do these drives and I just fucking hammer it the whole way. So I would drive up to Vancouver and back a fair bit from Los Angeles. I think that's about 18 hours. And I did it with this intensity that, oh, I talked about that last podcast. You know, always pushing. I went to the racetrack this weekend and pushed my car as hard as I could around every single turn and straightaway. And it, when there's an outlet, it really does alleviate a bit of the, like, need to drive that fast. Partly because, I mean, believe me, I'd be going 160, 180 right now. Actually, not at night. Truth be told, I'm not an idiot. But I'd be going 135, 140. The headlights on this old car are not great, though. It's one of those things where it's just kind of a design flaw. So, it'd probably only be 130. Because that beyond that, I'd be out driving my lights. And I don't want to be lying, sitting in the high beams and then pushing up people's ass and blinding them. Because again, I am not about safety or efficiency, which means safety. Because safe is fast. But false safe doesn't help anybody. That's just fake. But yeah, not being on that front edge all the time has shown itself to be annoyingly pleasant. And obviously I'm not just talking about driving. Let me use this show Saving Hope that I've been doing for an example. I'm doing what's called a recurring on it. I know a lot of my listeners are performers as well. So you know what I'm talking about. A recurring is where you're not the lead of a show, but you've got a real nice chunky arc of, like, you know, minimum 2 episodes. But the kind of recurrings I tend to do are a bit fuller than just 2. So I'll be the, like, lead in my own world, along with, let's say, whoever I'm working with in the world of the show. I hope that makes sense. So as that's happening, I'm shooting 2 days a week. You know, maybe 2 out of 7 days, up to 4, 2 to 4 days per episode. What that lets me do is lay back a little, because I do have to be focused for this show, and the arc I'm playing is very intense for me. But I don't have to hustle my photos, and I don't have to hustle an acting class. I am doing a lot of business side work on Barn Wedding, but when I say a lot, I just mean little threads that I need to keep a ball in the air for. So that's not even a crazy amount of work. It has been phenomenal. Now, I could, and maybe even should, earn a few extra bucks during the downtime, but I'm not gonna right now. Actually, the job just finished today until I find out what my next pickup on it might be. And none of that's confirmed. So as of today, the job ended today. Hence me zipping out to PEI. I was like, shit, I got 5 days, and then we're going to go down to Cape Cod. Hey-o! My cousins are all from there, from Boston. Hey, Sean-o! Hey, Boston! That kind of thing. That was not me doing a Boston accent, because if you really knew who I was, hey, come on over here, crack your skull. Jesus. I got headphones on right now. I got headphones on because I'm using like an earpiece in the car. Okay. My Porsche 911, I go on about it. It's fucking loud though. It is loud. These big longer trips, because I got this top that removes, it's called a Targa. And Targas are like the redheaded stepchildren in the Porsche world a bit. Because by being the best of both worlds, you got the removable top, but it's not quite the douche douche of a convertible, nor is it the solidity of a coupe. Truth be told, coupes are really the way to go if you're serious about motorsport. They're stiffer, they're lighter, and you know, I'll probably end up in one, but whatever, down the road. And the reason I'll probably end up in one is that I fool myself thinking that the lightest, tightest doesn't matter to me. That said, tonight there's no other car I'd rather be in, even with the noise. And I just hope it doesn't bug you guys too much. I lost my train of thought there. What are you going to do? I got to keep a little... Oh, that's why I got the headphones on. Got to keep a little focus on the road. So if we're juggling a bit, know that it's safety first, eyes down the road. I haven't been getting many questions lately. And the reason is simply because, again, I've been taking these pauses between podcasts. But as we're picking up again, if the CarCast format works, we're definitely going to be able to stay on track. So again, write me on Facebook or Twitter so that Sean M. Benson, I think, is my Twitter and Insta stuff. Insta, you can see photos. And again, I'm not trying to like net followers. I'm, you know, the 1,000 podcast listeners aren't going to give me enough followers to get free shit, which is, aside from enjoying the community of these things... free shit is the only reason why I'd rather have 2 million as opposed to my 1,200 followers. Because then, well, hey, free shit. So that's not the kind of thing I push for. But if you're interested in what the racetrack looks like or what the car I keep going on about looks like, then there you have it. And yeah, the staying focused stuff, and then the staying focused to not do the podcast as much has been an interesting one. I woke up a couple days ago with a sore Achilles heel. And, you know, it's like a little bit of tendonitis. I don't know what it's from, but it did come on the heels of 3 weeks of no physical activity. So I got this septum straightened. I can breathe way better now. I'm less nasal even than I was before it. Like, there's a reason I did it. As we've talked about, I was getting infections, and I was always kind of sniffly, and I'm just not these days. Granted, it's a nice hot summer right now, although a bit rainy for my liking, but that helps. But no, it's a different world for me. If you're on the fence, if you think you might have a breathing issue through your nose, go get it checked out, man. I did not want to do this. I was nervous about this. And I've never felt more... I mean, we're animals, right? Every cell, the mitochondria in our cells, depends on this oxygen. It needs it, obviously. And our cells flourish. Everything we're doing... is necessary, you know, that's what blood is, right? It's an oxygen delivery. Every person who dies from a lack of oxygen to the brain. I found this out, right? If you are choked to death, it's because you don't get enough oxygen to the brain. It happens one of two ways. The oxygen doesn't get to the lungs, and therefore the blood is being transported properly, but there's no oxygen in it. So you've deoxygenated your blood. Or, and by the way, or the other is that the blood doesn't actually get to the brain, the blood being that which carries the oxygen in your iron. So you need iron, because around your iron you get these oxygen molecules, and then that gets transported in your blood, and then that feeds all your cells. That's the thing that, so if you're being choked, one of two things is the oxygen, I mean, that would have to be your windpipe being crushed, doesn't get down into your lungs, and then your lungs aren't, you know, your alveolar sacs aren't filling with oxygen, where that's then crossing over into the blood that then is going into your veins. And if you're wondering which ones carry blood from and to, your arteries are away, aorta goes out your heart, and then your veins, inferior superior vena cava, and also venous return system. By the way, I'm in Quebec right now. Venir, that's the verb to come. I'm going to come, je viens. So that is how you can remember A away, V venir, V-E-N-I-R. So that's, your blood is coming from your lungs, where it's basically being reoxygenated, and then it's going back to your heart to pump out all through your body, and then once it goes through your body, it gets pulled back to be reoxygenated, and then back to the heart. So, if it's not, if your lungs aren't getting oxygenated, the blood is then traveling up and it's basically blue. So when someone's blue, they're lacking oxygen. My dad is 87, he gets purple lips, he has really low blood pressure. So his blood's not pumping. And that's the other one, is if you're, you know, let's say your jugular, which is, you know, you're going up to your brain, if it gets clamped in a choking motion, then you're just actually not physically getting the blood to the brain. That's the only reason people die. That's why you can lose a limb. That's why you can replace your heart, you know. But as soon as that brain doesn't get the oxygen, dead. The reason may be one or another. Pretty simple. And it's interesting, if you think about a motorcycle, fuel or fire. There's two, well, not even just a motorcycle, an engine. There's two reasons why an engine won't start. It's not getting fuel, or it's not getting fire. Now, once it turns over and it's chugging away and then it stalls, there's an issue with your fuel or your fire. And obviously, like, if your alternator's crap and therefore nothing's holding a charge, that's your fire. So your spark plugs aren't getting the juice, and everything just goes wah, 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 and then it doesn't keep boom, boom, boom. Cool shit, man. By the way, I wonder, you know, I don't know much about the Teslas or any other fully battery-operated things. I'm pretty sure that's a little different than your fuel fire because there's no fuel. I'm kind of talking about combustion. I'm not talking about the dudes, you know, smoking cigarettes, wearing Kodiaks, and bicycle helmets that for some reason they don't do up, riding e-bikes, weaving in and out of Toronto traffic. And the e-bikes never seem to quite have the charge they need to be going fast enough. God, these fucking guys. I love the idea of e-bikes, believe me. It's just the drivers of them. It's this weird, it's just how these things get adopted. Like, e-bikes showed up, and within like a month, every e-bike rider was just the same person. And you're like, what? How? Where did this style come from? But God bless, the one thing I give these e-bikes credit for is they're a hardy breed, because they'll kick it through the winter. And again, I know like a badass cyclist will too. You know, but there's something about the e-bike in winter. Like when I see a cyclist, my brother's one, and you know, they got the goggles and they're biking to work. And I did that actually for one whopping Canadian winter. Proper commuting on a bicycle, that's a whole thing. That requires cycle-specific gear. You know you're going to get a bit wet. You got to have the... But for some reason, that e-bike thing just kind of like straddles the line. Where like they went out of the house, they thought they might walk, and then they just went, ah, and kick-started. I guess you don't really kick-start the e-bike. What would it be? Flicked a switch? As if I'm making fun of an e-bike. Like, who gives a shit? You know, hey, unless it's a loud, noisy 30-year-old car whose AC barely works, it doesn't count. That's an interesting one for me. The air conditioning on these cars doesn't work amazingly well, even at full charge, but it works enough that it's frustrating, because if I pulled the air conditioning out of my car, I'd shave about 85 pounds, which is significant, especially the way it's weighted. It's in the back on the engine, a lot of it, and it's high up. So if you can drop your center of gravity and move your center of gravity more to the actual center of the car, I mean, that's amazing, while actually lowering it, so your horsepower to weight ratio is changing. Like, it's one of these free horsepower things. So obviously I'm pretty excited about the potential to do it. In terms of value of the car, I've got this real nice old car, but most buyers of these cars, especially a Targa with a removable roof, aren't too fussed about the AC, and they know it doesn't work very well. Anyways, it's just the slight coolness I want sometimes, but it's, I was talking to my brother about it today, it's not quite cool enough to be awesome. So it's almost frustrating where I'm like, is it even working? That said, I've got a little breeze on me right now, even at night. And any less, and I might be, well, we'll see. We'll see. You guys are getting what Emily hears every goddamn day, which is, oh, should I put the 8-inch rims on the car? Or do you think I should pull the AC? Or what do you think of a different sports seat in the driver's seat? And then I'd wrap. All great ideas, though. And you know, this is a hobby, so. And then I think the bottom line is, Em goes, yeah, but it's your hobby, babe. And then I go, cool. Well, next time you want to know which dress you should buy, when you already have a bunch. I don't even know why I just said that. Here's the thing. I grew up in the 80s when all sitcoms and, like, comedians predicated about 80% of their humor on this sort of male-female divide that, I don't know. I mean, my mom's so fucking nuts, and my dad's got his own version, I don't know what you'd call it, you know, where it just wasn't that, and partly because they're European, it just wasn't that typical sort of guys into stuff, but like has to only get the garage in the basement, and has to like sneak away and go fishing with his buds, and the wife's nagging him to do the chores. I mean, literally every sitcom and joke was about this. No, not the better ones, not Family Ties, which was better. It was actually better writing and more interesting. And then obviously shows like Seinfeld or Friends, but you're kind of standard, comedic, oh, ho, ho. And I remember once going to see Rita Rudner, who I thought was real funny up to that point, in Vegas. Now granted, it's Vegas, right? So she's playing to a bit of a generic sort of blue-haired set. This was the most generic, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, she may as well have been doing Henny Youngman one-liners for how fresh her material was. It was so dated and, like, reversedly misogynistic in that it was, I don't know, with the female equivalent. I mean, it was just the same bad guy jokes being told by a woman for the sort of, whoa, whoa. And I was like, that's just so bad. And God bless her. I mean, she had her show in Vegas, and I mean, you know, I think it was full, so she's doing fine, or was anyways. So she's obviously right about something, but I would never recommend that show or go to it, nor many of those sitcom sort of ideas. Emily and I don't have that dynamic at all, which is why I was like, I don't know why I said that. Emily loves chatting about this poor shit with me, to a point. You can't do an hour a day. And I love knowing what dresses she's thinking of, to a point. And I think for us, the point is not, I can't listen to this anymore. It's, we call it like a vibration. So if she's vibrating around the dresses, and it's sort of gotten to the point where it's not fun, it's like, whoa, 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 this is your hobby. And if this isn't fun for you, then it's definitely not fun for me. And it's the same with the car shit. It's like, should I? It's like, whoa, no, you shouldn't. You don't need to. Just chill the fuck out. So that's the only time when she might be like, chill it. Or I might be, chill it. And I think that's a nice distinction, you know? Why curtail a great time my partner's having unless I actually have to triage? So unless it's like, oh, fuck, babe, I would love to look at your dresses. I have to, you know, finish these insurance forms for Barn Wedding, or we don't sell the movie. Yeah, then it's like, sorry, babe. Not even sorry. Just let me explain to you what this is. I'll take 2 seconds to tell you why I'm not going to look. Other than that, why curtail the joy? Why when she's ebullient, not be like, fuck yeah, Lemmy? That's free energy. Excuse me, that's free energy. She's just up. Why not just latch on and get up with her? Or, by the way, and this is the beautiful part of it, because sometimes the idea of getting up, I understand, can be the inertial dampener. Oh, fuck, she's all excited, and then I gotta get excited. But that's the trick, too, is that, no, I don't. The up will have its own effect. I don't have to get up. If she's up, up will happen. It just might be a 4% up. But why not? I can literally lie in my bed, pause the show, that's whatever, and be like, huh? As she gives me a fashion show. Granted, her fashion show is a little more exciting for me than me showing her, you know, fucking European pre-mufflers, because they don't have a catalytic converter and my car's old enough that I could gain a few extra horsepower from. They don't look as cool as her in lingerie. I'd love to say almost, but no. No, I was going to say, but I'm not. No. No. No, I'm not even going to make that gay joke because I'm trying not to make those jokes. It's hard, man. I grew up in an era, well, we all did. We all grew up sometime, you know. When I say I grew up in an era, I sound like those blowhards, you know. Like, every culture thinks they have the market cornered on drinking. Oh, man. I am Russian. Of course I drink. Oh, I'm German. Man, do we drink. Oh, I'm Irish. Man, do we... Hey, I am from Spain. Fuck, do we... It's like, you're a human. You like to drink. I get it. Similarly, you grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. It doesn't matter. You know, you have a thing, a way that you think is kind of the... both the advantage and the limiting reagent, which is kind of what I'm getting at. Because I was going to be like, it's hard. I grew up in the 80s. We used the word gay in Guelph without any sense of gay. That's gay. I was 8. Gay had no relation to anything. I was asexual. Gay didn't have any... Like, if somebody said, what do you mean by gay? I'd just be like, I just mean gay. Now, why not say the same for nigger? Right? And that's why it's right that we don't say gay as a derogatory. Even though it was in a vacuum to the 8-year-old, it's not in a vacuum. So you just don't do it with consciousness. What's interesting, I find, is that, I mean, nigger's obvious. Yeah, I'm not a rapper, so I'm just not going to go there on it in my daily vernacular. Although I heard someone saying this, I think it was Rude Jude. Great, now I'm quoting Rude Jude. But I'm not going to not say the word either if it's the word we're talking about. I hope that makes sense. So with gay, that one I kind of just kept saying after I knew what it meant, using the justification, yeah, but I don't have any problem with gay people. Which, I mean, you know, some of my best friends are gay people. What?
Did he just... That I know of.
But what about the people who aren't your best friend and just hear you going, oh, that's gay? That's kind of shitty for them. And it reminds me of, like, pre-Borat. Long before Borat existed, I used to do similar things. We all did if you're... I mean, most actors I know did versions of this. Where I'd have, like, a mustache, and I'd be wearing, like, let's say a tank top and a tight pair of jeans, and I just kind of would catch myself in the mirror. I'm, like, 22 years old, and I kind of see myself at a Tim Hortons, and I see myself looking sort of like blue collar-ish. And that's not how I normally look. So I'd enjoy that. And I'd be like, wow, like I look like a character. So then I'd play that character. And I'd talk like the guys at the factory. Be like, fucking this and that, fucking, right? And then the fucking black guys come in and take your fucking shifts. And you don't want to be working. Whatever, I'd be making it up and I'd be riffing. And I'd think it was really funny. Well, it's not funny to the person who doesn't know it's a joke. It's not even funny maybe if you know it's a joke, because it wasn't even for a joke. Like, at least Borat was so overtly a joke. It was an experiment. It was a social experiment to go. And the one thing I realized pretty quickly is that, yeah, experiment over. If you stand in line and say things that are subtly racist, somebody's gonna just get a bit irked or a bit whatever. Like, and just like Borat or Ali G or whoever, you'll get someone on board who might even naughty a little. Great. You found someone who agrees, you found someone who disagrees. What's the cost? That said, artist friends, if it doesn't cost anything, then you're faking it. Because it costs a real person to be who they are. Huh? Getting deep here at fucking almost 11 p.m. in Quebec. It costs a real person to be who they are. When somebody down in fucking wherever is being interviewed about racism and they're like, well, I preferred it when it was segregation. Believe me, I'm not digging up archives here. People are saying this like this week, but there's no race problem, right? You've actually got fucking guys who aren't that old, like I'm talking like a lot younger than my parents, standing around saying America was better when it was segregated, and then they use that old thing, we just all got along better. I mean, it's for them too. So now you got a them. What the fuck? And now you got this, and Fox News is still trying to tell you that there's no race division, or if there is, it's black imagination. What the fuck? Anyways, point is though, that guy's just, he's like, that camera in his face isn't like a camera in my face where I'm performing. That camera in his face is his chance to say what he believes. Now, not God bless that guy, because fuck that guy. That guy's an asshole and that guy's wrong. I'm sorry, but there's wrong in the world. If ISIS can be wrong, then so's the fucking guy who calls black people them and thinks that segregation was a better time in the U.S. Hey, everybody, don't let minutia-based arguments make you think that there's anything not fucked about that racist asshole. Okay? Seriously, that's what that is. There's no couching and going, well, if you look historically, no. What did you just say? That you think a black person should have to use a fucking different part of the bus than you? And by the way, how you think that guy's gonna react when the black guy tells him what part of the bus? Because that wasn't how segregation worked. Segregation wasn't, let's draw straws for who gets the good part of the restaurant. So if you draw straws and the black guys get the good part of the restaurant, how do you think that fucknut, how do you really feel, Sean? This is how I really feel. How do you think he's gonna feel? Now he's gonna cry and bitch and moan about reverse racism and how whatever. It's like, look, yeah, there are outliers who are gonna take any cause and make it about themselves. But when that guy's there doing that, he's a fucknut. And by the way, anybody of any race who comes out and goes, fuck that other race, I'll just refer you to Louis C.K. talking about, you know, the Mideast and this ongoing whatever. Like, just drop the shit, people. Drop the shit. Everybody drop the shit. White racist prick, drop the shit. Inner city person, drop. Here's the thing, though. They're both suffering from the same thing that right-wingers want to pretend doesn't exist. And what they're suffering from is They were born into a thing from a genetic strain. I don't mean black versus white. I mean just two parents. Into a socioeconomic situation. And they got taught certain lessons. And 90% of what they're saying and doing actually isn't their fault. Sorry. Fucking pull yourself up by your bootstrappers. Or I was on food stamps, but handouts are for the weak. What? Because that is what we're talking about. My point is this. It's also fucking random, and so much of it is out of our, like, the depth of, there's no reason why I'm fucking sober and some other guy who went to 1,000 meetings OD'd last night. And if you think that that's not true, then I really do think you might have a bit of a crash coming. And some people won't, right? Like, some people are going to die happily racist and rich and living in wherever and thinking they won life. And they really are. But for most people, so much of what's happening is chance and luck, good or bad. And there are cyclical things. I love these people who say that, like, family's the most important thing. And you shouldn't raise the minimum wage because then it keeps people stuck in jobs that are just supposed to be transition jobs. And it'll hurt the economy. And you're like, okay, so how is the single mother, I'm talking now, supposed to help her son or daughter with homework? By the way, not even single mother, married mother, but socioeconomically, those people were born into a place where they were never going to Harvard. And here's the other thing, and this is interesting. Let me link this around. You want to know why you're an idiot if you listen to a right-winger tell you they care for you? Is because show me, don't tell me. So I'll use veterans as an example. Don't ask me how fucking veterans, I don't mean fucking veterans, I just mean how the fuck can veterans generally support right-wingers? When someone I know who's a veteran posted something the other day about all the veterans' rights that were voted down by all the American senators and congresspeople, every single fucking one of them was a Republican. But somehow the rest of this person's interests are in the right wing, whatever. And then, of course, when a guy like Donald Trump comes out and says McCain's not a war hero, we at least get what he really thinks. Fucking Donald Trump deferred. And then graduated with the equivalent of about $1.5 million of his dad's money. And I never heard it put better than in a Washington Post article that said, while Donald Trump was throwing his dad's name around New York, riding in limos paid for by his dad, John McCain would not mention his dad's name while being tortured in battle. Because if he mentioned his dad's name, it could compromise U.S. intelligence. But Donald Trump is walking around these days. By the way, Donald Trump, someone who troops had been supporting, and some I promise you still will. And then he walks around going, John McCain's not a hero, fuck him. While John McCain is literally dying for his country. But guess what? That is Donald Trump being what Donald Trump is, which is a right-wing cocksucker. I'm not saying all right-wingers are, but what I'm saying is this. Why do you think they will not vote for veterans' benefits? Because if you're a veteran and you need help, you're weak. And I'll tell you why. You're weak because according to the right-wing mantra, if one person can do it, then you're weak if you can. So if one right-winger, even though they're an outlier, goes from broke to rich, then you're a fucking weak, handout-seeking loser. Scourge if you can't do the same. The American dream is actually built on this, and Canada's moving in this direction, sadly. So if I did it, you can do it. And guess what? At least one person came back from war, having shot down the Jerries and fucking stormed the beach at Normandy, and they didn't have PTSD. They were okay with it. And they came back and they opened up the business with the GI Grant. And now they own, you know, distribution rights to all the frickin' fiats and the states and the rich. I don't know what their story is, but if one guy did that, then you're weak if you didn't. So while they'll tell you because they want your flag waving and Bible believing votes, that they're out for you. They don't put their money where their mouth is because they actually consider you weak. I'm not kidding about this. The compassion is only lip service, because there is none. There is none. Really take that in if you're listening, because there's no reason why anybody has to suffer through a war they were sent to, even if they volunteered, come home and not have access to not only proper health care, but the best of it. But that's never going to happen when you're quietly considered weak for having PTSD. Because why would you have PTSD when George over there is running a Chev Olds dealer and doing just fine? That's part of the deal. You can't have it both ways, right? Like, you can't say, well, why? What's wrong with the blacks when the Jews seem to be doing fine and they historically have had trouble? But what's? But every soldier gets my love. No, no, no. That thinking is, if that's how you think, then that's pretty much how you think. So, soldiers, don't be surprised when I shouldn't be surprised when the soldiers still support the right wing and even still support Donald Trump. Because, you know, we all believe what we believe, we feel what we feel, and we get off on it. And that's the thing I talk about, is the idea that of serving our own best interests. Sometimes our own best interest is to feel how we feel in spite of logic or facts. I heard someone say, oh, Neil deGrasse Tyson, that faith and logic, i.e. true reason, like full reason, are incompatible. You know, I buy that. I buy that. And it's so interesting because I've moved to become a person of faith in my life. And again, this is where me and my lefty friends actually separate a bit. When I just openly believe in a God. And what's interesting is I spent my young life living only based on logic. Just logic. Now look, yeah, I want logic in my car. Like, I want logic in math, if you know what I mean. I don't want it to be, oh, faith. Like, so in the world and in a life, I believe there's room for both. But in terms of my sanity, as a baseline of an operating system, I actually have to go to faith. Because when I go to logic, look, nothing I say about traffic doesn't make sense, including to the judge when I went and fought a speeding ticket, but he still hammered the gavel and said, not the matter at hand. So logically, everyone's going, you're right. But you're still getting a ticket. So I get to either rage or find a faith that lets me accept things as they are, not as I think they should be in my kid brain. Who knows what that faith is? We'll call it whatever we want. But how much do I want to live in rage, frustration, and being right but always feeling wrong in my own skin, etc., etc.? By the way, let's just go right back to the scene of the crime. The parents. Parents of the scene of your crime, too. Mom, Dad, if you're listening, well, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about, because I always talk about this stuff. My mom and logic are not friends. So as a child, I have trouble with inconsistencies that I'm perceiving and seeing. One thing's being said, another thing's being done, and 10 minutes later, the rules change. So, I strive to find something reasonable and logical in the world. Math, there's a reason I was good at math. It made sense. Gave you the same answer every time. Even sports, right? Like, the sports I did were score-based. You were good and you beat the other team, or you weren't as good and you lost to the other team. Pretty straightforward. Pretty good lesson for young, angry, confused Sean. Also happy-go-lucky. I was all of it. Anyways, the thing is that I talk about this a lot. We have these things that serve us when we're younger that don't serve us anymore. So this math right and wrong, this competitive win or lose. It started to bleed as a young adult into my conversational ability, into my work relationships. And all of a sudden, things started to go worse, not better. The very thing that had served me was turning on me. And I think that's a really key thing, because all that logic and all that reason was actually becoming the very cage that bound me and prevented joy, prevented release, prevented looking you in the eye and maybe hugging you or being hugged by you. And then I thought, what if I try this faith shit that I've always been like so annoyingly like first year fucking philosophy, there is no God and I can prove it. Yeah, whatever, fine. It's just so precocious. And there's nothing worse than a precocious 21-year-old. So I say, what if I just try the faith thing? And all of a sudden, life starts to get fucking good, man. Like, livable. Like, every day. Like, better every day. Almost. Some days still suck when the wisdom teeth come out or something. But the internal stuff isn't as bad. And I actually then go, fuck, DeGrasse Tyson's onto something, because every time I go back to the logic, logic leads me to how it should be, and then I get frustrated. Faith puts a little gap between me and my intensity, and hopefully lets me see how it is. And when I see things how they are, I may not like it, but I'm okay with it. And then I get to kind of function. So again, it's interesting because everybody thinks they see things as they are. And that's why wars happen. And everybody thinks their faith is the right one. And that's why wars happen. And everybody thinks their reason is the most reasonable. And that's why wars happen. So I guess we'll wind up the podcast with this. How's it working for you? Are you in wars a lot? Or are you kind of enjoying the flow? If everything seems like a bit of a battle, you might be wrong about how right you are. And if everything's kind of flowing, I'm guessing you've probably already found a place where you accept how wrong you are, and probably realize that you haven't even touched upon the breadth of how wrong you are. And in that wrong is the rightness of release. And can come the joy, at least in my life, it truly has, of, I don't got this, and I don't need to. It's a pretty sweet place to chill. Love you guys. Thanks for getting me another hour down the road. I'm probably only going to do another hour. I don't think I'll drive past midnight tonight. So I'll post this after the fact. Obviously, I'm driving. And I don't think I'll wake up tomorrow and upload this. So it'll be a day or two before you hear this content. But I guess that's the case anyways. You guys are the best. We'll start going to the questions again. And please hit me up and let me know how the quality of sound is. See if we can keep doing this car cast as is. Because truly, it's not like I'm ever going to get a better mic in the car. I don't want to. So I hope this works. You guys are the best. Love you. Chatting between takes. That's a wrap. Or as I would say in French, ça c'est la conversation entre les prises. Je t'adore. Je vous adore. J'ai fini. Non, ça dit que je suis mort. Oui, j'ai fini. Je suis fini. Je suis mort. J'ai fini. Maintenant. Merci. And I love y'all. Wicked!